Side Effect continues on Milwaukee Public Radio now. I'm Mitch Teich. Most of us have what-ifs, kind of fogging up our lives. What if I had taken that journey? What if I hadn't broken up with that person? Sometimes the answer is that things would be far worse, but sometimes they'd be far better. And the kicker is, of course, we have no way of knowing how they actually would have come out. Greta Wells, the title character in the new novel, The Impossible Lives of Greta Wells, is given the chance to redo, to fix her life. Thanks to a faulty or maybe even enhanced course of electric shock treatment, Greta finds herself moving in and out of other timelines. How she comes to understand herself and those closest to her through this time shifting is Andrew Sean Greer's way of exploring what one person might do if given the chance for a do-over. Greer is the best-selling author of The Confessions of Max Tivoli and The Story of a Marriage. The book tour for his latest book brought him to Milwaukee earlier this summer, and he told Lake Effect's Bonnie North he wanted to use time rather than place as his way into this story.
I think most of us think, oh, I'll go to a different place. But that's how I'll fix it. And so I guess my thought in this book was, if you went to a different time, would that fix it?
Or would that make it worse?
Would it make it worse? Because a couple books ago, I had a book, Confessions of Max Tivoli, set in Victorian San Francisco, and interviewers would always ask me what time I'd like to live in. And I would try to answer the beginning of the 20th century, but then I thought, well, I'd like to bring everyone with me. I don't want to be alone there. And then I thought, well, a lot of my friends, they wouldn't have a really great time. I mean, my female friends couldn't vote. You know, I don't think it'd be great to be a person of any color except as white as I am. And that made me think, like, well, there's not really a great time for everyone in the past or even now.
Right. I think there's a line in there where, and we were talking about that before the interview began, where Greta says, somebody asked her, is there ever a time for us in this particular, wherever she is, you know, that was ever good? And she says, well, no, not yet.
Oh, it was heartbreaking to write that, honestly. Except I know that there is one. She just doesn't – she hasn't lived it yet because the book begins in 1985. So it's already set in the past, her present.
What made you start there? Why start in 1985 and have these other times as opposed to starting now in 2013?
Right, that would be the normal thing. I mean, it's not exactly a time travel novel. And if you pick it up thinking that, it'll confuse you. So free that from your mind.
Yes.
But normally, if you're going to move around in time, you start in the present. But I somehow got it in my head that it'd be even more fun if her present was a different moment. And then I realized that 1985 kind of reflected moments in 1918 and 1941, which are the other two eras she visits, much more than the present. Mostly because it was times of war and plague, because of the AIDS plague going on, and change in women's lives and freedoms that interested me much more than the present day.
And that makes sense. That absolutely makes sense. And how she discovers what those freedoms are and how it's not necessarily the one she thinks that she's going to find or the restrictions that she's necessarily going to find.
Well, that was the other fun, because it'd be easy to say, like, oh, it's terrible in 1918. But actually, in my research, I was finding 1918 was particularly liberating. Even though women couldn't vote and everyone was about to not be able to drink and there was a terrible war and the Spanish flu, it actually looked like a really fun, free time in Greenwich Village.
Why do you think? What was going on specifically that made that happen? Because the Greta from that time certainly has what seems to be a lot of freedoms that we take for granted now. Freedom of movement, freedom of, you know, who she wants to be with and how she wants to do it.
For some reason, I think it was a generation that was reacting to the 19th century and was throwing off all of those. I mean, corsets were already gone by 1918, and that sort of says a lot. And also, men were gone. They were at war. So it was a lot of women just there running things. And in Greenwich Village, it was, for some reason, one of those moments, like the 60s, I think more than the 1920s, it was a moment of total free love. Like exactly what they meant in the 60s too. And they used that term and wild new ideas. They wanted universal health care in 1918 and thought they were going to get it. And they didn't get it until, well,
kind of now.
Kind of 2014, maybe.
Yeah, but of course, in Greta's timeline, it didn't happen at all. It hasn't happened in any way, shape, or form.
Yeah.
One of the things that you do, you said at the beginning, you know, if you were able to go to a different time to try to fix whatever you needed to fix, but you'd want to take your friends and your family with you, and you achieve that in the other timelines in certain ways. And it's interesting how her twin brother Felix shows up in the different timelines, how his lover Alan shows up in different timelines, and also how her aunt Ruth either is there or isn't.
Mm-hmm.
And as you were thinking about these characters and starting to figure out what they were doing and who they were going to be in the different timelines, how did you decide? Did they tell you where they were going to be, or
how? That is such a good question. I haven't had to answer something like this yet. Well, in a lot of it, I let myself a lot of freedom in this book to just write and see what happened, which was possibly a terrible mistake, because once I'd made this giant mess on the floor, I had to give it a structure of some kind, which was what took the most time. But I did find that I wanted, for instance, her Aunt Ruth. Well, I guess I had this idea that some of us would be indomitable and not be changed by the times we're in and not be moved by those motions. And that most of us, I think myself included, would be shifted just by the time we live in and kind of go along with things. Like everyone now pretends that if they were there at the time that they voted for Kennedy, although we know almost half voted for Nixon, or possibly more than half, you know, at the time. But no one admitted it. They want to be on the right side of history, but they're just moved along by it. And I think like her brother Felix, who is a lot like me in the book, is not really strong enough in a way, but Ruth is. And I think it's because the women, the people in my life I know are like that and who have suffered for it have all been women.
Suffered for what?
For standing outside their time and not doing what would be normal to do, or having the normal opinion and shifting that opinion to the new normal opinion. They always had what turns out to be the right opinion, but they're Cassandras the rest of the time.
And that's an interesting mythological figure to invoke.
I guess.
Because, of course, nobody believed her,
and
she suffered terribly for it. There's some suffering, certainly, that happens. And I'm thinking Ruth is one of those characters that doesn't change. I mean, she is who she is.
Yes.
It's kind of like wherever in time she would show up, she is who she
is. Well, I even made her – I tried to have her talk the same, basically, and not have kind of funny things to say in 1918 that were of their time, but just be the – dress the same, have the same haircut, all of it.
Be the person she is.
Be that person. And, and I guess – because I was asking myself, like, who am I really? And what parts of me are just sort of added on by how I've grown up in the culture I've been in? Like, if you really strip me away, what would I be? And I have the luck of having myself an identical twin, and I can see what someone who starts off with incredibly similar DNA, how their life is and similar upbringing, how it can shift even there. Although I admit I live next door to my brother. We have very similar lives. But that sort of thought experiment about what is the essential part of me, and I thought with Ruth, all of her is what you're seeing is exactly who she is.
What price does she pay for that?
Being an outcast and being alone, really. But also what she gets to me is freedom, although there's some tragedy in there too.
And what about Greta? Because it's through her eyes that we see – that this story unfolds. I mean, Felix, her twin brother, is an essential part of that. And of course, so are these other characters. But it's her story. It's her grief and sorrow that sort of kicks all of this off.
Well, because in a way, she – at the beginning of the book, she's been stripped away of everything – everyone she loved and depended on, and is at the beginning feeling like there really is nothing to her. And I think it is her journey to see what is consistent about herself day to day. But I think what she also finds is that she's not consistent. She's made up of all these different kind of people who are like a colony working together to be this woman, Greta Wells, especially because she's aware that there's other ways she could have been.
We haven't mentioned probably one of the most important characters in the book, and that is New York, and that is Greenwich Village.
Yeah.
And in all three time eras, it's the same place. It's the same apartment building. It's the same apartment. in its different guises. But New York itself and Washington Square and that whole area, and anyone who knows that area has a mental picture of it anyway from whatever time they spent there and whatever era that was. But there were times when you were describing being out on the street or going somewhere or whatever, and I could smell the air. I could feel it. I could feel the sidewalk. And I thought, how wonderful to bring along the place in the time as well, not just the people, but the place.
Well, I guess what I wanted, and now I've written three basically historical novels, so I don't know what I'm up to here, but in each one of them, I would do all this research and then use almost none of it. I would use things I made up because I have no evidence of how each time smelled. But having read it all, read newspapers and pamphlets and people's memoirs, I could imagine it, and I thought, well, that is my job as a novelist, not to report the research I did, but then to imagine something that's lost forever. And there's a moment in the book in 1918 where she looks up at the sky and she sees the Milky Way. And of course, in New York, you cannot see the Milky Way.
Not now.
Right now. And I don't know. I assume you could have. It was a moment where it occurred to me, oh my God, there were so few lights in those days that you could have seen stars, and how sort of sad and beautiful that there was a time when you could have done that. And that's something that is just imagined, but is the fun part.
So what is it about historical?
My best friend asked me this 6 months ago. He said, are you going to write another historical novel? Because I don't want you spending 6 months in the library. He said, I think you should try the present day. And I am actually what I'm working on now. But I think previously I had always, I'm a fiction writer because I actually don't want to write about myself directly. And I think I set things in the past because I don't want to write about the present day directly because I can't process it very well. Even though I can sit with my friends and process what's going on and I know pop culture and politics and things, somehow I can't quite create the world I'm in. And it's like sort of looking at, you have to look at Medusa through a mirror, not directly at her. It helps me a lot. Once I set something in the past, it suddenly is wide open for me and fun.
So is it more difficult writing the present day thing you're working on now for that reason?
You know, it's somehow fine. I'm doing okay. But because I'm not trying to capture, the job is to not get today right because I'm going to get it wrong. I mean, that's what I learned about reading newspapers from the past, is it's hilarious that it will say in 1952, world ends tomorrow, big sale Tuesday. They can't both be true, but it's holding contradictory ideas about itself at the same time. We really don't know what the future is or what's important right now.
Thank you, Andrew Greer, for writing The Impossible Lives of Greta Wells and for stopping by today.
Thank you so much, Bonnie.
Andrew Sean Greer is the author of The Impossible Lives of Greta Wells, published by HarperCollins. Greer was in Milwaukee earlier this summer on a book tour, and he spoke then with Bonnie North. What if you hadn't tuned in at 10 o'clock this morning? All of us who produced this show would have been just a little bit crestfallen. And likewise, we sure hope you'll tune in again tomorrow. I'm Mitch Tyke. We are here every weekday morning at 10 with Lake Effect from 89.7 WUWM, Milwaukee Public Radio, NPR in Milwaukee. Keep listening. Fresh Air is next. It's 11 o'clock.